This is the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. On the phone line with us today from Atchison, Kansas, at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, is Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon, Todd.
No, it's been a really nice day. The weather there is beautiful as it is here.
It absolutely is, especially when we had 3 out of the last 6 days or 7 days of 98 to 101 degree temperatures. So we will take definitely the mid-70s at this point.
And I suppose that heat really did a number on the crops in the area.
Yeah, a lot of turning, and I think you're going to see a lot of wheels moving this weekend, Todd. I think the corn that was probably benefited the most from the early rains, maybe still a little bit too wet. I haven't spoken to anybody today about it, but I would guess that you're going to see some end rows cut out. And actually, the beans out here have turned amazingly quick in the last week, and we might actually see some cutting of beans before we actually see a lot of shelling of corn.
Have you talked to anybody that been in the bean field yet?
No, not yet, other than back in the central and eastern corn and bean belt. And it sounds like that the early beans are coming off very, very good, and that they did not get hit as badly as and the early corn, for that matter, did not get hit as badly by this August and early Sep weather.
Hey, what's up with the difference between the September and November contracts in the bean pit? Sep's up 46.75 for the day. November and on out, of course, we're lower.
Yeah, I think two things. You're probably going to be hearing about some trapped traders in the September contract, maybe some deliverable issues that were out of position and got hit pretty hard as a result of that. November did not pick up the thing and run with it, Todd. I think mainly because that bean corn ratio was already way overdone, and I think the beans are probably at a point where they need the help of the corn and the wheat to take up to the next level. Basis also got pressured pretty dramatically here on new crop for September. A lot of changes around the Corn Belt, 15 cents lower in central Illinois, takes you up to 50 cents lower on the day in Decatur, Indiana, and you go all the way to a dollar under basis in places like Michigan. So that, and I think you just had probably a real issue with the chart gaps in the market. You've got a weekly chart now that you have an island in place. You have gaps below you and gaps above you. I think the biggest thing I was surprised by in light of the report numbers was that beans could only close 13 cents higher on the week and corn only closed down 3.5 in the D's.
Have you done the ratio? What is it at the moment?
Well, I think we closed right around 3.01.
So
we're back up around 2009 highs. And, you know, this is where the USDA report, this crop right now is a mirror image. In other words, the ending stocks for both oil seeds and corn, soybeans and corn globally, ending stocks are both going up. But who's doing it? And in corn, it's going to be all United States because the foreign production actually got cut. In the beans, it's the exact opposite. Brazil and Paraguay got a 6% increase in their production, a 4.3 million ton increase in their production yesterday by USDA. That puts 6% more on ending stocks for soybeans. U.S. Crop dropped the world ending stocks down by 4%. So the net effect is an increase in ending stocks when it comes to year over year again. So you're talking about 10 million tons more this year versus last year, even in light of what we're dealing with on the U.S. crop here in the United States.
And so while we may or may not have a soybean crop that ends up short, we're still kind of up in the air about where that lands, I think.
I think so, too, and I think the harvest pressure probably was the final say to answer your question in a long-winded manner, that why didn't we go higher after the SEP closed in beans, and I think the harvest pressure side of the equation won out.
Okay, so I have a question about South America, and I don't know where you land on this one, but we keep hearing about kind of almost as if it's a battle for corn acres in Brazil and that soybeans will win that battle and they will not plant corn. But I'm wondering why that would be the case, because it's just a follow crop, right? So
it is. I think the bottom line for me and what I've come to the conclusion at this point is that the Brazilians especially are very cost-sensitive right now. They are probably the most cost-sensitive they have been in 5 or 6 years, and I wonder if that's not because they smell a change in the political wind and they smell a change in what their profitability is going to be. I saw an article today that the South Americans really haven't participated much in the lower fertilizer prices globally. So I'm guessing there's a political element to this in terms of a government subsidy or lack of subsidy, and it's really making them much more cost conscious in this environment. So they're not going to really spin their wheels hard and break their backs like they have the last 5 or 6 years to get that second Safrina crop in.
Yeah, does this mean, of course, that you're still laying some worth on the export market supporting corn over the next year or so?
Yeah, that's part of it. But you know what's neatest about this report, to me, is that the USDA is still way too low on the export side of the equation, mainly because of the production. And let me run through it real briefly.
Sure.
You've got 2011 production was 12.3 billion bushels. Exports were 12.5% of the production. Last year, drought, we went down to 6.8% exports of production. This year, USDA has us at 8.8%. I'm really in line with the idea that if you can ship out 12.5% back in 2011 when the average price was $6.22, why can't you at least do that or better? And so that gets you back up to a 1.7, 1.75 billion bushel export pace instead of USDA's 1.2. So that's really the statistical and the historical is where I'm coming from more than anything when it comes to the demand. But yes, the Chinese crop and the South American new crop, those all factor in, as does the wheat market.
Have you thought about how competition and usage both, and demand, I suppose, might factor into that? Because, of course, you have Ukraine, you have Brazil, you have Argentina, who probably all stepped up. And then you probably had, I would assume, but you'll have to tell me, there were folks that were just not using corn. So you have to kind of weigh them all back into the marketplace and see what we come up with. So
yeah, you do. And I think this is where, you know, you're right. The feed wheat is a big issue. If you
right.
see some problems in Australia, or I've been hearing problems in Russia now at the end of this week with some wheat quality issues, if you see feed wheat rear its ugly head, that's going to move me a little bit. But, you know, you bring up a huge point, Todd, and it goes back to what we talked about in Iowa. We've got total foreign production on yesterday's report for corn in the world. The foreign production dropped another 2.5 million tons, puts even more pressure on our supply. So we are the dominant player again in the world supplies until we get that new South American crop.
Willing to bet on it?
Am I willing to bet? I do my whole life every day that I live and breathe, Todd.
No, I'm not betting against you. I'm just asking the question, man. Just asking the question.
No, I know. But, yeah, that's what my whole career is founded upon, is this kind of analysis. So
yeah,
bet.
Yeah, I know. I know, Michael. I know. Okay, so we know where you stand on the corn. We got a pretty good idea what you're doing on the beans. What are producers to do as they go into harvest mode here? Are they going to, with their cash sales?
Yeah, if you've got to dump off the combine, you've got to dump off the combine. But I would be looking very eagerly between now and the first day of fall, and as we get closer to the end of the month and the stocks report, to be buying back those bushels or a good portion. You know, the trade has been playing this 2009 market for quite some time in corn, in my opinion, and we made a major low in early September for the Deese corn of 2009. We did the same thing for this year. The next low in 2009 came on September 21st. We really didn't look back, and by the end of the contract expiration, we saw Deese corn rally about 27%. So that's kind of the model I'm using for those producers that don't have on-farm storage and can't wait out the price turnaround.
You got questions ready for Joe Prasaki this afternoon?
I do. You betcha. That's why I was in contact with him earlier this week. God bless him. I wish him luck.
You going to ask him if he's betting on something?
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Michael. We'll talk with you again in a couple of hours. Thanks much.
Okay, thanks, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.